6:30. So I declare the meeting open. You've got to love the city of Marion, full of surprises. And what a shame we have no members of the public to share them with tonight. But we'll get started. We begin by acknowledging that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people, and we still respect their elders past and present. I'll let everybody know that the meeting will be recorded for audio, made publicly available, except for the really interesting bits. Sorry, except for the confidential bits. And I ask elected members if there's any item where they foresee they may have a conflict of interest. Councillor Byrom, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Your Worship. The grants applications, one of the organisations that has applied for a grant have asked me to be patron of their organisation, so I just declare that. So I'm not sure what classification you'd put that into.
Thank you. That would only be perceived because when you're asked because of your capacity as an elected member, it doesn't create a material conflict. Councillor Crossland.
Again, it's just a perceived, and I may be overdoing it, but in the emergency management, my employer is mentioned quite a lot in that communication, but it's only perceived. I don't think I've got an actual conflict.
Thank you. We'll note that down. Others? Councillor Blescu?
Safe conflict. I do know one of the grant applicants for the youth grants. Yeah,
you know,
grants,
one
yeah.
of the grant recipients?
Recipients, applicants, yep. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. So will you be staying or leaving for that? Or
I guess I want to take part in the overall debate, but just
right.
on
so
the
So just note
it,
there's
yeah.
a perceived yeah. conflict. I think we should probably note who the person is that you know. Ms. McKenzie, what do you think?
The True North Group.
True North Group, okay. You don't stand to financially gain. No. Thank you for clarifying that. All right, I think we can move on. So asking someone to move confirmation of the minutes of 10th of July with the appendix. Councillor Hutchinson, second, and Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. Someone to note the communications reports. Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Hutchinson, all those in favour? That's carried unanimously, thank you. A bit like a Mexican wave out there, that's all right. There are no adjourned items, are there? So no deputations, unless they're from staff, can't see anyone else. So on to committee recommendations. The public minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee. Someone like to move? Moved Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Pryor. Before I put the motion, just ask if there are any questions. Okay. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Not so much a question. I'll bring this up at Infrastructure and Strategy Committee when we get to that next one. Look, I think the discussion, noting that there's a difference between committee meetings and council meetings and that the actual discussion is minuted at a committee meeting, it's not at a council meeting. I think, look, considering the amount of time we spent on the Tonsley Water Agreement item at the last Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting and the level of questioning that occurred, that's not really reflected in the minutes to my mind. I think it could be a little bit more fulsome, and especially not just the topics that were brought up by the administration, but also the questions that were asked by the committee as well. But I'll bring that up separately with the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee.
Thank you. I note that sometime after the committee meetings, generally the minutes are circulated for comment, so there's an opportunity there to raise such a point, but at this stage, we can just take that for staff to note. Thank you. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you very much. And Now, just before we move into confidential items, what I propose to you is, because there's a public report, or, you know, recommended for public consumption report on the Tonsley Water Agreement, that's also a confidential report on the same topic, it makes a lot more sense to deal with the confidential element first and then come into the public arena with the public discussion of the topic. So with the leave of the meeting, I'll do it in that order, and that means that we can decide that we can look at the confidential items as a block, one after the other, and then we can come out of confidence and deal with the public element of the Tonsley water issue. All right, so the first one that we come to is the confidential minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting. So I'll see if somebody wants to move the confidential motion recommended. Councillor Hutchinson, Secretary Councillor Crossland, all those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. So we'll go into confidence apart from the named people there. So with apologies to other staff, we'll have to leave the room for the moment.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I'd like to move a deferral of this item for until the next council meeting. And in doing so, in the meantime, I'd also like to request that a legal review be undertaken of this particular contract. I know that probably 80% of this contract is standard Essential Services Commission of South Australia clauses. However, noting that it is a 50-year contract, I think it's quite appropriate to get a lawyer to look over it. Yes, if it can be brought, if the legal review can also be brought back to that next council meeting. I've got plenty more to say about this contract, but I'll hold off until then. Look, not for the moment. I'll hold off until a fortnight's time. Look, I do have other issues with this particular item in that we don't actually, whilst the risk is on the purchaser of the water, we don't actually own the licences to which we're referring within this contract at the moment. There's two licences, an APA and a Juna licence that we don't yet own. So, look, I'll foreshadow that I'll look forward to speaking to that in 3 weeks' time.
That 3 week timeline.
that table. Just have a re-look at the... please.
I move as printed, please. Sorry? Oh, only that, of course, supporting youth work is great, and it's really the role, I believe, of local government to support as we have been here. Thank you.
Thanks for your concise support, Councillor Crossland.
I'm not sure this is the appropriate time, but I'd like to move a deferral, but I don't know if that first motion has to be heard first.
I would... We'll go for a call a seconder first, then we know if the motion's on the table or not. Is there a seconder? There being no seconder, I'll entertain for the motion. Yes. Councillor Valescu seconds the motion. So up to you to speak, Councillor Valescu, but then I'll come to Councillor Crossland next.
We've had some discussion. Has that been on all that time? Have the mics been off? Oh, you've turned it on for me.
The mics should be on.
Oh, far out. Sorry. Look, I'm just we have had some discussion about the caretaker period, and that there will be no events or anything like that, that council funds are not used in any way to promote any candidates, and therefore things will slow down as far as the civic events go. But I'm just wondering whether this has been highlighted to the participants. Because there is a declared candidate who's front and centre of one of these organisations. The event is, at this point, from what I understand, planned to happen just before just when the voting papers go out. There might be other opportunities for other people who may be associated with that could be running, that they'll be put in an awkward position as well. So I'm just wondering what we're going to do about it, and whether, those sort of anyone. If an event does look like it might stray into potentially uncomfortable situation as far as the legal requirements, whether it's possible to actually defer council funding for the event, so they're given, they want to do it next year or after the elections are over. That's my question.
How do staff propose to deal with this problem, Mr. Lyons?
Through the chair, at this stage, I know that one of the 10 recommendations, the project contact for that particular recommendation, is a declared candidate for the up-and-coming council elections and the local government elections. Mm-hmm. The shortlisting of these 10 were undertaken before that was known, and to be honest, the application is still fully compliant and meets all of our guideline requirements. If perchance this recommendation was approved by members, then my position is that I would, through some careful wording with governance, make sure that nomination is aware of their obligations and responsibilities through the election period.
Well, Councillor Valescu raised the option of deferring payment to the organisation until, the election, after the election period or something like that. Do you wish to comment on that, Mr. Lyons?
That's a possibility that members could decide to do. At this stage, it's a compliant recommendation, but members could decide to do that.
Now, just before I come back to you, Councillor Valescu, you've seconded the motion, so you can't really move an amendment. Councillor Crossland, can I just ask you informally, what's your reason for deferral?
Set up the youth grants was trying to fund out of our school activities, so weekends, holidays, out of school, and that was sort of locked in. I know the guidelines got reviewed, but looking at the list of recipients and what's happening, at least three of them are back funding school in-school projects, which wasn't the intention of these grants, in my opinion.
Would the solution be to that, that given that these people have been through the process on those guidelines, that we once again examine the guidelines for the next round and bring your concerns into that process? What do you say?
I was just thinking there are quite a few others on the not recommended list that would meet out of school activity, and I just wanted to know from staff whether we could revisit some of those if we were going to defer and actually re-evaluate. I'm not sure how we've gone back to funding school activities, how that's crept back in.
All right. I get the point. We've had a mover, we've had a seconder. It's now with Councillor Crossland, and you wish to proceed with that deferral motion.
I'll move on that basis, and the other one that I'd like just to cover off on
was... Well, actually, if it's a deferral motion... Well, I guess you get to speak and then move your deferral motion when you're ready.
OK. I'll just finish speaking. It's only one other thing, and the other one is it's one of the same applicants anyway, but just look at that we are meeting the need for inclusivity in all the applications, and it's not gender biased in any way. And I'll move the deferral on those two points.
Right. Are you deferring to a particular meeting?
With staff agreement, still to the next general council meeting, if that can be done by that time, or in August. I'm happy to put in August.
Are you suggesting there should be some informal gathering time to discuss the matter, or you're just going to leave it to staff, or...?
If I could say defer it to August, I think that should give us enough time to...
Right, defer it to August. Is that seconded? Councillor Appleby, I'll simply put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. So we'll come back to that in August, and people can have a closer look. Lovely. Let's move on to... Marion RSL Playground, page 87. So the happy news there is that although council, the original talk was of a playground constructed of second-hand materials, council staff had said it would cost 90-something thousand to build it. It's been built for something under half of that, and the equipment is new. So the proposal comes to you that instead of forcing the Marion RSL to undertake regular inspections, for which they would need specialist training, that in fact we incorporate it into the council maintenance program. So that's the motion for you. Anyone? Councillor Hutchinson to move. Seconded Councillor Telfer. Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Next one, Marion RSL. Again, their lease for 21 years. Lots of exciting things happening there. They've got the Vietnam Vets Federation moving in as a subtenant as well. 21-year lease. Everything else agreed. Got Councillor Telfer to move. Would you speak to it? I can't hear you, Councillor Telfer.
Sorry, I have to take the or clause out to give you something that I'm moving. The second one, obviously.
The yes. That's good. Given what we've just resolved, it's a little bit tautological, but that's fine.
Well, so, then I can suggest that the dot point comes out, because we've done that.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I've been corrected by staff, Councillor Telfer. The actual proposed lease doesn't include that, and therefore, you are quite correct in the way you moved it. Do you wish to speak to it?
Yes. We're finding the Marion RSL group that meet regularly, are a stalwart, enthusiastic group. They have their hands over what they're doing and how they're doing. This will be excellent in terms of a worthwhile lease and a very solid club going forward. So we're very pleased that this is going to be in place.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson, wish to speak? Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, this is one of our facilities with poker machines, and this lease makes no mention that I can see of a poker machine. Would it be possible to include in the lease, under the special conditions, that there will be no increase in poker machine numbers for the duration of the proposed lease?
I think that amendment would be in order, but I'll just check with Members Dixon.
Through the Chair, if members go to the bottom of page 91, one of the terms of the lease is no additional gaming machine entitlements to be acquired.
Your wish is granted, Councillor Hull.
Is there any plans for a reduction in poker machines?
I'll ask Ms. Dixon to
answer.
The
minimum is zero, I think.
Yeah. Through the Chair, this is aligned with the previous resolution passed by Council and the leasing policy passed by Council that the premises that do currently have gaming machine entitlements cannot extend those entitlements.
Well, that being the case, Mr. Mayor, I'll speak against the motion on this grounds, and it's well known to the Marion RSL. I don't believe our council facility should have poker machines in them at all. One may well say that they can go down to the pub then, but it's the principle of it. We need to actually lead by example. There are many councils in state that have actually taken this position. In fact, Marion is one of the few councils in South Australia that has this situation. The city of Holfast Bay might be the only other one that I'm aware of. And I think that with returned servicemen, particularly now we've got the Vietnam vets going in there, they are an acknowledged group within our community that are particularly vulnerable because of what they've been through, that they may well resort to poker machines. And I just think that we need to lead by example. I don't think the council should be addicted to poker machine revenue, because not so much in the case of the Marion RSL, but particularly across the road at Club Marion, one could argue that the status of that building and the amenity of that building is from poker machine revenue, and we as a council are inherently a beneficiary of poker machines to get the facility to the point it is. I know within the RSL at Marion there is disquiet. It's not an agreed position with all the members of that club that poker machines are a good idea. And I think that this is one of our rare opportunities to actually indicate to that club that we as community leaders feel that it's inappropriate to have poker machines in a council-owned facility.
Thank you. Anyone else speaking in favour? Question from Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. I asked it of the administration today, but I just wanted to put it on the record as well. Question through you, Your Worship, to Ms. Dixon. This is the first time that we've gone outside of our new leasing and licensing policy in terms of the length of a lease, is that correct?
Through the Chair, we are also in the process of negotiating a lease with Club Marion that Council endorsed to be a 21-year lease. as well. The leasing policy allows council to consider leases beyond 5 years, and that needs to be brought to council's consideration.
And the reason specifically for this one, for going beyond the 5 years?
The Marion RSL is looking to invest in the facility, so they're looking for a longer term lease to see the return on that investment into the property.
Councillor speak. Well, I suppose that was only a question. Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Byram.
Thank you, Your Worship. Having dealt with a lot of the RSL people there and in answer to some of the questions and comments raised, to get a lot of grants through Veterans Affairs and organisations of that nature, they have to have a long-term lease to be eligible for applying for those grants. A five-year lease will not give them eligibility for those grant applications. So there is a requirement for a long-term lease for some of that aspect. The other thing is that we're putting in some new buildings with Vietnam Vets. Again, with a lot of the grant application and things with that, we needed a longer-term lease than just the 5 years. Even 21 years for some of the negotiations is very tight. But the RSL is wanting to start negotiations with us in talking about what happens with that site and what to do with it for when the building has run out of life. At the moment, I believe that's another 20 years, and they 20 to 25 years, and they want to start negotiations on what's going to happen and start fundraising and looking at what grants they can get and what to do with the future of that site. They are long-term tenants for us. They're not going to go away in a hurry. They are going to be there. I also want to make comment about the pokies, and I am very disappointed that they're being lumped into the same category as Club Marion. There is a total difference in the number of machines that they have there. They have the minimum allowed by the state legislation regarding that, but they have the RSL care and the counsellors at the RSL. They deal with hundreds and hundreds of cases a year of looking after veterans, and it is so important to see, and this is what I would encourage a lot of counsellors to do, is to actually look at that and to see how that is operated and run at the RSL level, in the care that is given to people that are having PTSD, have come back from serving our country overseas, and to say that they have to move out of that building and go somewhere else when they're having problems, and yes, gambling problems, but to have the care people there, the counsellors there, knowing how they're going and when they're needing extra help, is so important to keep that at that location. So we have to be able to look at all sides of the issue, not compare them to other sports clubs that have pokies. There is a special need there, and we need to recognise that and have understanding of that and what our service people have gone through when serving overseas. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else speaking against the motion for the lease? Then I'll give the mover a quick right of reply if need be. No. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. So we move on to page 94, I think. Sixth Avenue, renaming. I have a mover. Councillor Hull. Page 94.
I'm happy to move the recommendation as printed. I'm pleased that the community has endorsed this. From memory, it was 74% or something. I did read the report. Agreed that it should be changed, or could be changed, and welcomed it. 77, yeah. Yeah, I think it speaks for itself. We've already discussed this and moved that we put it out for community consultation, as we're obliged to, and the results come back as we thought.
Seconded. Councillor Telfer.
I think this is a very worthwhile naming. We have the Graham Watts Playground at Cosgrove Hall that also recognised a councillor that had a long input, as Joan Herriman did. She has a long record that's well known to many people in the community.
And I was down at Appleby Reserve just this morning. Fantastic new playground. It's not the Jerome Appleby Reserve. Right, if there are no other speakers, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, carried unanimously. And God bless Joan Herriman. Hope she's smiling up there. Right, over to page 104. Just to bring us down to earth, Community Emergency Management Plan. Who'd like to move? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move this. This actually is very comprehensive. But it will only work if some of our other systems are in order. And what I'm getting at is, and there's a couple of things I'd like to say, actually. What I'm getting at is that our after-hours call centre. Now, emergencies of this nature do not always happen at convenient times. They could be 1 o'clock in the morning, where we have a flood or some other catastrophe, and we really should be prepared for this. And with recent experiences with the After Hours Call Centre, I'm not convinced that our systems of communication are in order to actually support this policy tonight. So I'd like to flag that. The other one is, and this is taking this to another dimension, I work in incident management. I am a functional manager in the Country Fire Service. I've worked on floods and fires in the state incident management team. It worries me that compared to overseas, particularly when we look at Japan and maybe New Zealand, that we do not have a community-wide preparation, that we do not have... It talks in this report about doing exercises, and that's great for the staff, but as a community, we do not do that. And I really think we rest on our laurels too much, that in South Australia, we're lucky, and in Marin in particular, we do not have cyclones. We've only got some bushfire interface of a reasonably small nature. We could have an earthquake. We don't realise that we live in one of the most earthquake-prone cities in the nation. But we do not prepare ourselves as a community. And that does. And I've raised this a number of times over the years that I've been on council. And I probably should just ask the question whether the staff would consider looking at this issue as part of the plan for our city that takes it outside the boundaries of our staff. So in moving this motion, I'd like to ask that question, Mr. Mayor, and also flag that we need to have good communications to back this up with our call centre and other means of communication.
Thank you. Comments from staff? Ms. McKenzie.
Through the Chair. I can provide Council with the information that we do have a zone management exercise which is set up, I believe, in about 6 to 8 weeks' time. So that would include the cities of Marion, Onkaparinga, Mitcham and Holdfast Bay. I think part of what the councils are trying to do is get our housekeeping in train first. We do know that we need the community and we need to be able to engage with community and specific community groups as part of our emergency planning, but it's the next phase after, I guess, we've got the councils ready to go and the council's fully aware what each of our roles are in those circumstances. So we do take your point on board, and what we do have is, I guess, a planned approach in regards to how we're going to get the community involved at the next stage. My understanding is that Ongapuringa has started that because they have had more flooding issues than what Marion has, and they have started engaging with a number of their community groups to get them involved in what to do if a flooding situation occurs. So I think some councils are probably more advanced than others, but it depends, I guess, on what their history has been as well.
Seconded. Councillor Byram, question?
Sure.
Thank you, Worship.
Are you seconding, though?
Yes, that's my intention too. But I want to have a look at on page 120 at the top, or page 14 of the actual policy document under insurance. I did want to ask the question there that the insurance does not cover road infrastructure or drainage infrastructure. I also had a query there as to whether it covers, you know, conduits for the power lines and piping for water, all of those sorts of things. And the reason I'd, if you give me just a bit of flexibility here, please, Your Worship. But my reason for asking this is that my brother actually works in Santa Rosa in the States and was heavily involved in their bushfire situation they had over there last year. His best way to describe it was like the Adelaide Hills were burning and then all of a sudden fire broke out in Glenelg and they lost 3,000 houses. That was how he described it, and he's heavily involved in helping to re-establish that. Now, not only was the houses lost, but because it was so concentrated in the fire, they lost all their infrastructure. They lost their sewage systems, their water pipes, their everything went. And there's arguments over insurance as to who is to cover all of that, and it's going to be years before a lot of those houses will be allowed to be built again because of the problems in that regard. So I raise this question because I think that we can learn lessons from other people, and we need to check whether those things are covered. So I don't know whether the staff have answers on that tonight, but I think this is important that we understand, and as we get more heat and more things happening with climate change, we don't know what disasters we may have in this regard in the future. So we need to be aware of who is responsible for all the infrastructure, because if it all goes and we can't build houses there again until it's done, who's going to cover a lot of those costings? So I think that's very important. I do want to second the motion because this is so important. And I do want to state that Councillor Hulse made the comment about other systems in order, and getting education going of the wider community, I think, is very important. We have this, the old Aussie adage of she'll be right, mate. Well, I think we have to make sure that it will be right. We need to make sure we are ready for whatever disasters may occur, and there are going to be things that will happen in the future. Thank you.
Ms. McKenzie can answer that question now.
Through the chair. Due to the size and the asset value of roads, they aren't insured because it would be cost prohibitive to do so. My understanding is that that is common across local government. If you were in a natural disaster occurrence, it actually gets picked up by the state government under their natural disaster funds.
Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thanks very much. On to page 142.
Majority, Your Worship.
Pardon, Councillor Jerome Appleby. That was carried by majority. Point of order is upheld against the Mayor on that one. Page 142, Local Government Association AGM coming up. Another absolute ripper coming up. They're trying to stitch us up with a changed constitution. I let you know that the Mayor's available to be voting delegate, and I presume the Deputy Mayor's available to be proxy delegate. So I'm looking for someone to move a motion. Councillor Valescu? As printed with those names, thank you for your confidence. Any additional remarks? You don't have to. Seconded, Councillor Telfer. Anyone question? Councillor Hull.
In terms of our representative at these meetings, could it be possible that we as an entity would have a different position put if one Mayor Hannah was present or two Councillor Byron was present. Is that a possibility that it could be a very different position taken by whoever is actually attending that meeting?
There's always the possibility of different delegates voting or speaking in different ways, although it has to be said Councillor Byron and I both have a pretty sensible view when it comes to these things. But look, some councils spend literally hours, and I do mean hours, before each LGA meeting going through each item on the agenda and fixing a position. And then you could send along the mayor, the deputy mayor, or a trained monkey to vote according to the council's wish. We don't do that. You can always, I would suggest by way of a motion, bring that about. But the problem is, as you well know, every meeting is so full. The only sort of light on meeting we've had for 6 months was the last general council meeting, finished a bit early. But generally they're so full that we it's very hard to know how to fit in the time to deal with 101 sundry motions, some of which are asking the LGA to amend the Australian Constitution and sign a peace accord in Moscow and all sorts of things.
Well, could I ask this question? Whoever is in that position, would they be simply speaking on their own personal beliefs, or would they take into consideration what they would reasonably think to be the view of the city?
That is certainly what I attempt to do in the local government association meetings. I suspect that any of the deputy mayors we've had in the recent past, including the current deputy mayor, would do the same thing. You know, if you think there's a particular example where that hasn't happened, then you know, you can certainly raise it. And but generally the approach is to try and pursue any resolutions of council or be guided by any past resolutions of council. If not, then there might have been some informal gatherings where there's been some discussion which give a clue as to how to go. But, you know, that's generally the approach, I'd say. Councillor, well, we've had a mover and a second. Have you got a question, Councillor Falescu?
To recall us doing something, can anyone from the staff remind us if we have actually done anything and what was involved in that process to take a position forward?
Through the Chair, yes, we did used to provide a report to Council which listed all the motions, and then we sought a resolution from Council regarding how we would vote on each one. So each motion was put in a table with whether we would vote yes or no. This Council determined that they no longer wanted to undertake that process.
Any more questions or speaking against the motion? Councillor Westwood.
Question, just following on from the last one. So did we determine that with a motion, a past motion? Did we determine that we wouldn't consider the agendas of LGA meetings?
That's what Ms. McKenzie just said.
Through a motion, right.
May not have been a motion.
Okay. So how did we determine that?
We could really only have determined it through a motion.
So it was.
So through the Chair, I don't think the previous practice was established through a motion. It was just something that was requested that the previous term of council would like to do. When this term of council commenced, there was a general discussion, and I think the general feeling was that we didn't want that type of report. So I don't think either process was established via a motion.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions or comments, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. Page 145, Local Government Finance Authority, AGM, coming up. Now, are there... Councillor Telfer, you wanted to move? I have heard a name where there's some interest, but Well, I should let you know that he's too humble to put himself forward, but Mr. Tony Lyons, our General Manager, has expressed some interest. If anyone would like to take that into account. Councillor Bulescu to move. And again, the Mayor's happy to be the Council representative. Would you go along with that as well? All right. Then we have a motion. Is that seconded? That's right. If no one's suggesting any motion, can't really think of one, then can take that out. Seconded, Councillor Telfer. Any speaking against or questions, Councillor Hull?
Have we received any findings from the Auditor General's inquiry into this organisation?
To be a bit more specific, the Auditor General, September 2015, published a report revealing scandals, in fact, in my interpretation, with the local government insurance schemes. The LGA set about a lengthy process of appointing consultants, having a review, having meetings, etc. I have raised questions at, I think, at least two general meetings of the LGA now, calling for the findings of the review to be reported to councils on a confidential basis if need be, but that is consistently refused, and I believe that is shameful. But it wasn't into the LGA as such, it was into the insurance schemes. The LGA say they are fixing that. The latest instalment, if you like, in that saga has been a letter which has gone out from the Chief Executive of the LGA, I believe, to Mr. Skull, saying that a new incorporated association is being set up to help manage the schemes. But one of the problems pointed out by the Auditor General, the fact that Jardine Thompson were on the board deciding who should be the insurers, when in fact they are the insurers, they remain central to the insurance process for the LGA schemes. So there are a lot of unanswered questions, and that was an excellent question, Councillor Hull.
Well, could that be our point four, that we actually call upon this organisation through their AGM?
I can see the point of order coming, that we were actually just dealing with that on the previous motion. However, I think we have to deal with the LGFA, which is the Finance Authority, which is a separate entity from the LGA, although the LGA sends a couple of people, I think appoints a couple of people to the board. But I would be willing to entertain a motion without notice to tack something on effectively to the previous motion. We have until the 14th of September, so that could come forward as a private member's motion to the next meeting.
Mr. Mayor, I'm not a great enthusiast for the LGA. I'm not across everything, but is this not the organisation that manages those insurance
benefits? No, it isn't. No,
it's not.
The LGA owned the relevant company as a wholly owned subsidiary, and that was the target of the Auditor General's inquiries.
Okay. Sorry, I foolishly assumed that Finance Authority would be dealing with such matters.
No, and just for general information, the LGFA is a statutory authority set up by state government, and it is essentially a bank to local government. So they take money from local government, they give out loans to local government, and they invest on behalf of. So that's basically what they do. So separate from the LGA. Thankfully, the LGA hasn't got its hands on all that money. So I would welcome a motion along those lines, and either Ms. McKenzie or myself can help you with that. If you want to bring it to the next council meeting, maybe that's the best way to deal with it. So it probably needs some thought as to the precise wording. So we're dealing with the LGFA. Any more comments? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thanks very much. Now we go over to page 152. The Local Government Boundary Adjustment Amendment Act. Now, for one thing, this is of course a huge improvement for those who want less red tape in shifting council boundaries. Possibly it doesn't go far enough. I mean, we can request if we want that the state government undertakes a boundaries review of the whole of metropolitan Adelaide in keeping with the, with a similar review to the state electorate boundary redistribution, and shake everything up and have councils of roughly equal sizes, maybe within a $50,000 to $100,000 band across the metropolitan area. That would probably improve governance quite a bit around the city. But anyway, just throwing that idea in there. The other point to consider is that we have in our informal gatherings and our correspondence talked to Holdfast Bay, City of Holdfast Bay, about at least a boundary change down at the new development at Merino, or Seacliff Park actually, next to Merino. So we may well want to put ourselves down as one of the councils that would seek to use the process. I mean, we're not committing ourselves, it's really just putting our hand up to say that we might. It would certainly be sensible to see some boundary redistribution, especially in relation to Holdfast Bay. Publicly, I've said, and to the Mayor of Holdfast Bay, I've said that they are welcome to territory of the City of Marion. I hope you don't mind. I've said they can have all the way up to South Road. But they haven't taken me up on that. Over to you, members, to move an appropriate motion. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. I think I'll move with the second one, which is by tomorrow. And that we will submit a proposal. Yeah, but there's two motions.
So you can either, it's either advising the Local Government Grants Commission directly or advising the LGA. I'll just ask Ms. McKenzie, as governance manager, why wouldn't we just advise the Local Government Grants Commission directly?
Through the chair, yeah, council is more than welcome to go direct to the Grants Commission. The LGA is just offering it, so we just wanted to make sure that council was fully informed of its options.
Oh, sorry, I'll change that. We'll move with the first one then.
Yeah, I mean, we can always send a copy to the LGA, but why wouldn't you send it to the people that are asking for it?
Yep.
Anyway.
And it gives us more time. Sorry, I thought they were just varying the dates. Look, this has been a long time coming, members, and there's some good opportunities for all councils across South Australia here. The member for Black, in the second readings, I noted some of the old chestnuts in our boundaries, but there's also others, such as in Glengowrie, where there's unnatural alignments down streets and in and out and whatnot. So it presents a great opportunity. I'm also happy to see the 10% of affected residents can put forward their proposal, not 10% of the entire population of council, which I think was mooted at one point, but that's really good to see. So it's realistic around who's affected, they get a say in it, and they can initiate it. So I'm happy to commend the motion to you, and I'm happy with the staff comments. I think they're all very reasonable on pages 156 and 157. And they make some good points, particularly about the costings of it. And what was the other one that I really liked? There was there's another one anyway around the consistent practices. Yeah, there was another one anyway that I thought was quite good. So, they're really well written as well, so thanks for that.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Byram, any comment? Then anyone speaking against? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So that gets us closer to the end of the agenda by a large amount. Are we on page 202 now? I think that's right. Next item, minutes and recommendations, the LGA Special General Meeting. Now, of course, the actual Special General Meeting, which I attended, as did Councillor Westwood, I think Councillor Byron might have been away, Deputy Mayor was away at that time. The Special General Meeting itself was short. It came after a morning of, brainwashing is not the word, energetic advocacy against rate capping is probably a better term. And also, to be fair, after hearing the Minister for Local Government put his case for rate capping. So this report, you'll note, is just to note the minutes for what it's worth. The very next item in our agenda is actually to deal with the substantive issue of rate capping. So this is a two-second job, but I thought I'd just give you that framework. Councillor Westwood.
The motion is printed.
Thank you. Did you wish to speak further?
Other than to say it was an interesting meeting to attend? No, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Telfer, seconded. Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we do go over the page, page 208. And it's an interesting one. Rate capping or unlimited rates? I'll ask Councillor Hutchinson to move, but with reference to Councillor Hull's question about the Mayor's speaking at these events, I will report that in the question time to the Minister for Local Government prior to the Special General Meeting to which we just referred, I did make the point about Marion Council's position taken last year, the fact that we did not join the LGA's rate capping campaign, in part because it could be seen as political. But I did raise the point with the Minister of those parts of the state where there is, in a sense, a structural problem. And I referred specifically to fringe metropolitan areas of Adelaide and booming country towns like Murray Bridge and Mount Gambier, where there's for a sustained period, there's a very heavy infrastructure investment required because of massive population growth. And I referred also to the structural deficit in many country regions where they've got a very low rate base and yet they've got quite high infrastructure needs for roads and so on. Now, I know that the Grants Commission is part of the answer to that, but it seems to me that with the rate capping, this is perhaps the biggest argument against it, that there are regions, there are councils that might have a genuine need for increased rates for years on end, and whether the ESCOSA application process is appropriate for that or not, I don't know. But having said that, obviously if rate capping is introduced, Marion Council won't have any problem. Thanks to the good husbandry over many years of Mr. Mifsud and others, if I may say so. The Chair recognises Councillor Hutchinson to move.
Thank you, Your Worship, and I certainly echo your comments about the regions, and certainly being a member of the Local Government Grants Commission previously, I certainly have a deeper appreciation than most of those. For me, I'd like to see a more prescriptive way that those regional councils, or even a metro council if they needed to, apply, put a request in at least for a variation on that, and make that sort of a... I still feel like it's... I'm not too clear on it through this document, but anyway... So I'm moving that we support rate capping, and as printed for the rest of it. And I think we also, yeah,
seek some advice that supports is what is being moved.
Yep.
Yes. Well, we're all using rate capping as shorthand for the bill, yes.
Supports the Local Government Rate Oversight Amendment Bill.
And then I suspect it's inconsistent, really, with the paragraph 3.
And the only other thing I would add is if we could, and I'm doing this on the fly, add something around clarifying or enhancing the opportunity for councils to put a variation through on that determination that Ms. Gozer comes up with.
And how would you wish to improve that variation process?
I haven't thought about it enough, to be honest, Your Worship, but I feel that there needs to be some sort of more of a robust process there.
What's the mischief you're trying to address?
That local government is given adequate opportunity to put forward variations to the determination handed down by SCOSA.
All right. Well, I mean, the government's position is that does exist.
I know it exists, but it's not. Yeah.
I mean, I want to help you out here with wording, but I'm not sure of your intention. So,
we'll leave it then. Let's just leave it there, and we'll see how that flies.
Right. Is that seconded? Question from. I'll take the questions, Councillor Crossland first.
Yeah, I've read various documentation. Is it possible, as a feedback from our willingness to accept the rate capping, that we also would like the government to look at accepting the rate cap that is set as an increased level for their...
That's certainly possible. I think there was a council in the South East that made just such a suggestion last year, that if it's good enough for us, it's good enough for you, or words to that effect.
Motor reg and all those extra charges that we keep getting hit with, I'm happy with the rate cap as long as it's across the board with all their charges as well. That seems fair.
Why don't you move that as an amendment? You've raised it as a question, but I'll come back to you.
Or I'm happy to second Councillor Hutchinson's if he wants to add that in.
It's cleaner to do it as an amendment. I mean, it's a bit different. So, Councillor, I'll go to Councillor Valescu now. We don't have a seconder yet, but...
I think there are various elements of the bill which work and which don't.
You've got a question?
Yeah, so is it possible to support the idea of keeping rate rises at or below CPI and just leave it at that? Because then...
Probably fair to say that's the intent of the bill, although it doesn't pinpoint CPI.
Because you've got the situation where actually you've got a bureaucratic body that will look over all the budgets and everything and look over all the councils, and then you've got a special process if you want to go above that. What we're sort of saying is that we agree with the principle, and that's all we make the comment. Is that something that we can do? We agree with the principle?
Well,
involved?
You know, it's cutting hairs a bit, I think, but you could move an amendment that added the words "in principle" if you weren't sure exactly about the wording of the bill as such.
Well, it's more so some of the elements of the bill, because we're either supporting it, you're with us or against us, and we're complying. In fact, we're doing better than what's required. But then some of those other elements, like the oversight body and
the
process involved.
Well, look, I think if it's departing the actual motion, hear from the mover.
Point of order, the motion on the screen is not what I've moved. That's actually the second one where it's actually meant to read advises the Local Government Grants Commission.
Don't know. That referred to the previous motion, which was about the boundaries. Getting late, I know. But Councillor Blescu, if you want to go down that track, I would suggest an amendment which replaced the bill with the principle of rate capping at about the inflation rate or something to that effect, because it is actually departing from comment on the bill as such. So I've had two questions. Is the motion seconded? Councillor Pryor. Question?
Yeah, just a question. What happens if we don't reply?
Everyone goes to bed a minute earlier. But if we don't reply, obviously it will have an impact on the LGA campaign one way or another. It might report publicly that X councils said yes, X said no, or Y said no, and Z didn't say anything at all.
Yeah, look, I'm happy to second this. I think we're in a really good position here, and it doesn't really make that much difference to us whether it comes in or not. So I think the intent is good, and I think that it's worthwhile doing.
All right. Anyone coming at us with amendments or opposition? Councillor Byram? Well, I've given you the call if you want it, Councillor Byram. I've given you the call if you want it.
Thank you, Your Worship. So I did want to speak against this. I know that we are a council that is really looking at trying to keep rates down, to really look at expenditure, and I'm proud of what we have achieved in that regard. I'm proud of where we are financially, and that is now. But by voting for this and supporting it, we're voting for the future as well, and anything that happens in the future. The other thing that concerns me is that to say we're supporting it means we are supporting extra money being spent on an organisation being set up to do all of this, and we're supporting the fact that we will be charged thousands of dollars if we ever have to put in a variation or a submission towards it. So on the basis of we're trying to look at saving dollars for ratepayers and taxes, that I can't support it because I believe that if we want to show fiscal responsibility, that we should not be supporting this bill. It doesn't really go in the face of what we try to do as a council in saving monies. What's been said by a lot of the councils in New South Wales is when they pay thousands of dollars to put in an amendment and 90% of them are improved and are just ticked, it belies the fact of why is all this money being spent to do this process that's been introduced. Let's save that money. Let's look at that. Is it really warranted? We are doing well. Most of the councils now around South Australia know that we're supposed to be trying to help ratepayers. We're trying to do that. There are some councils that in the country we know have a little bit more problem. We've also got the problem in South Australia that the grants that Councillor Hutchison referred to, we are at the lowest percentage of all the states around Australia. We don't get as much support as anyone else, and we are asking, and that was asked at the National Assembly, that the inequality for South Australia be addressed regarding those grants. So we are causing problems for all councils if we support this bill, and I think fiscally we have to say no to it.
Anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Hull, you're holding up a bit of paper, but are you speaking in favour of the motion? No, you're not. Is anyone speaking in favour of the motion? Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Worship. I'd like to echo your comments earlier that we've already made a decision that we weren't going to join a campaign to oppose this rate capping, and I think in hindsight that was the right thing to do. The election has been and gone. The LGA seems to be in denial. Their brand's toxic, and we didn't join their campaign then, and I don't think we should join their campaign now.
Everyone knows the rules of debate we're following. We're going for and against in the debate. Now the option... Order! Order! What's your point of order?
I can move an amendment, surely, at any time I wish.
No, that point of order is not upheld. You cannot just start talking at any time you wish. No. Now, we've just had a speaker for, so now I'm inviting a speaker against. But having said that, and this is a fair approach, I've got three councillors have mooted a possible amendment. I think I should go in order of those who raised the issues. So I'll ask, Councillor Crossland, did you wish to move an amendment?
Yes, I'd still like to move an amendment, Your Worship.
Can you bring that forward, please?
Thank you, Your Worship. I'm just moving the amendment. It's echoing the first bit that Councillor Hutchinson moved, that I am in support of the rate cap, but I believe that the rate cap should be applied equally to all increases to the state government's charges across the board. So if it's good enough for us to have a cap, then the same cap surely should apply across all levels of government in this state. And on that basis, I would support the rate cap.
And now I ask for a seconder to the amendment. If you speak, you're exercising your right to speak in the debate as a whole, so you can speak to the amendment and or speak to the motion. Councillor Hull?
I'm happy to support this. This has been a long-standing position I've had in my qualified position on what the current government is trying to introduce. But I'd like to flesh this out. If I can ask through the chair, would the mover be happy to explain those charges so there's no loopholes? That would include state taxes, levies and charges. Would that be better to actually spell that out?
I'm happy with those changes. I think we're talking about the same things.
Yeah, mover's happy to accept as a clarification taxes, levies and charges. Well, I would say state government, taxes, comma, levies and charges.
Mr. Mayor, in speaking to this, when I hear the Minister talk in rhetoric that we need to address acknowledged hardship, the capacity to pay in our community, and that's what we've done over a few years now, they have to actually walk the talk themselves. They can't actually then impose other charges that are probably more significant to the community than what our rate rise might be. So I support Councillor Crossland on this inclusion. It does spell out our position and some, because if there is going to be fiscal responsibility and acknowledgement of people's capacity to pay, it has to be acknowledged by all levels of government, not just local government. As for taking the ASU line, the letters here, I'm sorry to disappoint them. In terms of their membership, in terms of Marion, I don't believe that there's any adverse result for their workforce, for their membership. I really do believe that. Because, as you know, we've got carryovers in our budget where there are sections of our workload that can't be done by our staff, and it has to be outsourced sometimes, sadly, to actually meet the needs of our community. Because this council's not only keeping rates low, but it's actually delivering on service improvements and major projects. As for the LGA, Mr. Mayor, could I suggest that it's in the best interest of the LGA that our rates go up and up and up, because that means we can actually pay more and more and more for the LGA fees, and actually support the cottage industry that we know of as the LGA. So I think that the ratepayers deserve to know that we are looking after them in terms of how much their rate rises might be. Now, in closing, Mr. Mayor, I remember all the bollocks that we were told by the previous regime, that if we didn't provide our rate increases at 5% for the next how many years we would have to cut. Do you remember that? Do you remember that intimidation we got in the dying days of that last regime where we actually were threatened?
Right. The amendment having been seconded, we put it immediately to a vote. All those in favour? All those against? The amendment is carried. The debate continues. There is scope for one more amendment. Councillor Valescu, you did raise a concept. Do you wish to move an amendment?
I would like that we advise the Local Government Association we support rates increases being limited to CPI in the metropolitan council areas, and we leave it at that. I don't want to get into a spat with the state government in regards to their fees. We talked about we're patting ourselves on the back for not being political, and now we're being political.
Councillor Valescu, I just want to ask one thing. Your amendment, first of all, do you have it in writing?
Not yet, no.
All right. Secondly, does it include the condition that's in the amendment we just passed?
No.
Well, I understand that, but I think despite what I said at the beginning of the debate, I think what you're moving now is actually getting to be a negative. So I now would rule that you need to probably hold fire, and if this motion fails as amended, then I would come back to you if you wish to move an alternative motion.
So can I speak now, or would I lose that?
You can speak in the debate to this motion as amended.
And then if this fails... Okay, all right. Well, look, I'll foreshadow that we support that in the metropolitan areas that rates don't, do not rise above CPI, and we've demonstrated that it can be done. It takes into account the challenges they have in the rural areas, and we're not getting caught up in the politics of the bill, because there's some elements that may not work, so others that don't, and we have to have a position either way, which I don't think it's that clear cut. And also, I don't want to get caught in a spat with the state government about their fees, because you know what? If I need to use a hospital, and I go to a hospital, and there's no one, there's not enough funding because the state government said, oh, we're keeping our levies and charges at CPI, I'd rather have more taken out of my levies and charges to fund those facilities. I know it's a different beast with local government, I'm not going to get caught in that debate. So I'm foreshadowing that we tell the community, that we tell the LGA, we tell the government that we agree with the principle of rate capping for metropolitan, principle of rates not going up above CPI, and we've demonstrated that, and then leave it at that.
Is there anyone else speaking in favour of the motion as amended? If there isn't, then I think I must go to the mover to reply.
Thank you, Worship. I supported the amendment as well. I think, members, there's a few things that came out in that debate around the state. I'll start with the state levies. The majority of levies are already increased at CPI or less, so I don't think the state government is going to feel that we are picking on them in any way, shape or form by just reiterating that, hey, it's a fair playing field for all South Australians. The other part of the debate got into the few thousand dollars that it might cost for a council to effectively increase their rates by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I found that really interesting. The other interesting part I found in the no debate here tonight was the more inequities that they wanted to create for South Australians by saying, hey, we want to tax you more. That is nonsense. The whole fact of the problem with South Australia's distribution is at the national level. It's the Commonwealth funding for South Australian roads that is inequitable, not what we are doing internally to the state. So, members, I wholeheartedly hope you support the bill with the facts, which I've just outlined to you, and that we can move forward with a sensible motion. The world didn't fall in New South Wales. They're still operating, they're still working, and they're still there.
I'll put the motion as amended. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against. Division is called by the Mayor. is in favour. Councillors Pfeiffer, Telfer, Hutchinson, Pryor, Hull, Appleby and Crossland. You may sit down. Those against, Councillors Westwood, Byram and Velescu. I declare the motion as amended carried. Thank you. So, on to the next one. Now, there is a questions taken on notice register, but there being no questions on notice for the time being, I don't think we need a motion as such, but I certainly agree it should be left on the agenda so that we can all see that's the case. If anyone disagrees, let me know. Just saves a bit of time. So we can move on to page 241, work health and safety. Someone to move. Councillor Telfer, seconded. Councillor Pryor. Did you wish to speak, Councillor Telfer?
I'm very pleased to see the graphs lower and that there were 4 incidents during the year, and obviously the emphasis is going lower again and finding ways to cut out accidents so that our staff and our wellbeing improves.
Councillor Pryor, anything to add? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Sorry, there was a question. Hands down. Sorry, Councillor Crossland.
Sorry, it might be a question that has to be asked on notice, but is Mr Lyons able to tell us how much these injuries and general absence from work is costing the City of Marion?
I think it would be better if I took that on notice and got back to you.
Thank you, and good, we'll have something on our register next time. Can I have that vote again? All those in favour? All those against? They're carried by. That's unanimous, thank you. On to page 245, change of policy, meeting procedures. I can understand why Councillor Hull's moved this motion. We have this unusual situation where the Mayor sometimes comes up with motions. And of course the history to that is, in the old days, the Mayor used to meet with people privately in the parlour and smoke-filled rooms and sort out what was going to happen in the council meeting before you came in. That doesn't happen anymore. The law says it can't happen. And there is therefore a policy argument, at least, that the Mayor should be able to contribute to the debate in that way. However, I will seek Ms McKenzie's advice on the motion.
Through the Chair, so as you'll note in the comments made, our recommendation is that the motion's ultra vires on the basis that if the Mayor is present at the meeting, he must preside at the meeting, which is in accordance with the meeting procedures.
I guess the alternative is that the Mayor could move the motion then depart the room, but there are some problems with that too, perhaps. Ms McKenzie, what do you think?
So the intent of the Act is that members should be present to debate a motion unless they have a conflict of interest, and that is when they need to obviously excuse themselves from the meeting.
Well, I'm going to take that advice and rule the motion out of order, but I invite Councillor Hull, if he wishes to continue the conversations with Ms McKenzie to try and resolve whatever mischief he sees afoot. We'll move on to the next item, page 246.
Point of order,
yes.
That you just reflected on me, and I asked you to withdraw that. I was naively hoping that we could simply have the Deputy Mayor go up there and you could swap seats, you could then contribute. Obviously, that is not the case. I'm just making the point that there is a conflict.
So
if you're actually moving a motion and chairing the meeting, that's all I was doing. There was no mischief involved. And I was looking for some solution.
Order. I don't uphold the point of order. The remark about mischief, just to clarify that, is a term that lawyers commonly used, meaning the problem that's there to be solved. Now, you have in your remarks referred to the problem that you think should be solved. But what I'm trying to do is inviting you to talk over that problem with Ms McKenzie to find another way of solving it. It's not meant to be a slight at all. So let's move on to the next item, page 247. Councillor Velescu, network of dog parks.
Just think that I'd like us to have a bit more a wider scope and planning that we look at when we are looking at dog parks, because we do have a couple of really desirable dog exercise areas in our boundaries, and we do get a lot of people from the neighbouring councils and the councils neighbouring those that are coming to use them. And I think it'd be better for everyone if working with those councils that we look at, you know, opportunities for joint grant funding to spread out some of those larger dog exercise areas in other places, in other councils, to let more people access those and take some of the burden off the ones that we have. So it's really trying to improve the offer throughout the area, and I understand there's a little bit going on already, so this is just, I guess, a bit of a recognition of that and to carry on.
Thank you. I stress the staff response that the motion supports current practices. Is the motion seconded? Councillor Pfeiffer, you wish to speak? Then anyone speaking against? Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, look, staff do talk to other councils on a range of issues. I'd hate to see us bring a motion for everything that we want them to do. You know, there'll be another one for pavements, then there'll be one for trees, then there'll be one for roads. It's happening. I really don't think we should be going down the track of let's ask staff to do something they're already doing. It doesn't make sense.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Westwood.
Sorry, I didn't get the call earlier. I think it's quite useful, actually, to network on all these kind of projects, whether it be dog parks, community gardens, or other such facilities. I would hope that council staff do actually contact the other councils and have a very good working relationship with them on these kind of facilities.
They're saying that they do.
Yeah, well, I'm pleased to hear it, but I think actually when a particular Trop Park Community Garden, for instance, was created, I understand that, I believe, that the staff were struggling to bring together the facts and what community gardens were operating in the region, and also the information that we were given and how the policy and the framework were drawn up at the time. And I think that there was more of a, at that time at least, more of a silo effect than there is now. So I'm pleased to hear that now we're networking well. Thank you.
Anyone else speaking against the motion? Then I'll go to the mover, Councillor Lescu, to reply. Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried by majority. Next on page 249, Councillor Valescu's at it again. High density dwelling impacts. Councillor Valescu.
Basically, I have had residents contact me in regards to infrastructure that we put in to manage traffic issues that result from increased activity and safety risks associated with increased activity, and the increased activity is a result of higher density dwellings built in the vicinity, which we have had to approve. And the residents think that we just choose to approve these and that we then choose to spend the money to keep people happy there. And the fact is that we have to approve these high density dwellings, that there is no choice with that. The development guidelines are very specific as to what we can consider, and it's the secondary and tertiary as problems that result because of these, what I feel are inappropriately located or built dwellings, that we should look into, because it is the community's money that we're spending. We're not getting lots and lots of extra rate money. I think the growth is around about 1 to 1.5% that are new dwellings, and some of those are replacements as well. So it's not a 1 to 1.5% of extra dwellings. So I'd like us to get a bit of an idea of the types of instances where this occurs and what options we have. And part of that could be collaborating with the people building. So if there's the opportunity for indented parking to minimise some of those issues in front of those dwellings, then maybe we consider that if the builders would like to pay for that, that we could approve it. So they're the sort of things to look at. And if there are some huge deficiencies, maybe that's something we can bring up with the appropriate minister or look into the future.
Is that seconded, Councillor Westwood?
Yes. higher density dwellings or areas, I have to say, have concerned me. In particular, when I was on the DAP in the past, it did seem quite a concern that parking was already fairly heavy in various streets, and people were parking their cars instead of in their driveways and in their garages on the street already, and then suddenly there were quite a few higher density dwellings developed in those areas, and of course the problem of where the cars go eventually wasn't really well resolved. So I'd be very happy to see a report and a bit more light on that subject. Thank you.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Appleby.
Yes, I'm speaking against the motion. I'd like to move an amendment as well in the process and delete the second paragraph. I think that while there are parking issues, that it's not workable to charge homeowners or developers for off-street parking that the council may have to implement, because it would be an onerous task actually tracking down who's parking there. Some people have lots of visitors, some people don't, some people have cars, others don't. Some people that live in established houses on a full block may use off-street parking. You don't necessarily have to be a new development. So I just think it's...
I thought I heard point of order. Councillor
Mr. Mayor, by deleting anything in a motion, fundamentally has to be a direct opposite.
Councillor Hull, I was thinking about that very issue, and the way I look at it, the motion essentially consists of two parts, and because the councillor wants to support one part, not the other, and they're quite distinct directions in a sense, I think it's appropriate to give council a choice to either proceed with both directions or just the one direction, which is in the first paragraph. So therefore I don't uphold the point of order, and I give councillors therefore the opportunity to either proceed with both paragraphs or one paragraph, because that's the intent of the amendment. So I'll go, and do you have a point of order, Councillor Vlescu? It's the intent, the amendment is clear, it's to delete the second paragraph. Councillor Appleby, did you wish to conclude?
I just wanted to finish off by saying...
Please
I think
do.
The solution is to have, if there is a problem, is to have more off-street parking, not to charge people for on-street parking.
Is anyone else... is someone supporting the amendment? Or no, order. I'm asking for a seconder to the amendment. The mover can't come in on that for some reason. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Rishi, you put me off there. No, I do support that. I'm aware of at least one location in my ward where there was a traffic device that was modified as part of increased density. But members, what we've got to remember is parking on the street is everyone's right. There's no right that a resident has to say, you can't park in front of my house. I'm sorry.
Order. Do you want to be thrown out, Councillor Vlescu? Well, then, please, sorry. Just hold your fire. Till the appropriate time, you will have a chance to close the debate and reply to all these points. Just make a note of them, if you wish.
The debate's gone down the line, Your Worship, of rights to park on the street. And every resident, every visitor can park wherever they like. It's public infrastructure. From that boundary fence out to the curb, right across to the other side of the road where the boundary fence is public land. They have a right to park there. And if we're going to talk about how traffic affects traffic flows, we only need Mr. Griffin in the room who will be the first one to tell you, parking on the sides of the roads slows people down. If people are worried about speeding down their street, they're worried about congestion, you park cars on both sides of the street and people will avoid it like the plague. So I'm not so worried about the second point. I'm happy to have a report on where we've had to modify infrastructure. I'm aware of at least one, as I mentioned, in Mitchell Park. And local parking management, yeah, sure, it's, it can be an issue, but we've certainly have catered for it in different locations around providing for churn, at least, so people can't park there all day long, particularly around transport.
Is any now we've had an amendment and a seconder, so I put the amendment, which is to delete the second paragraph. All those in favour of that deletion, put your hand up. That's all those against deleting. That amendment is lost, so we continue debating the motion as printed. Any other speakers? Councillor Hull? Councillor Hull, speak.
Mr Mayor, I'll speak in favour of this. I think, to be fair to Councillor Liske, he's been taken out of context with this. I don't think there's any intent to deny anybody the ability to park in their street. It's in fact actually trying to find a remedy to that. The reality is in our streets now, and particularly in my ward, as Councillor Pryor would acknowledge, is that we've actually had to restrict parking on one side of the street because of urban infill, where we can't get a garbage truck down there, we can't get a fire truck down there. And why are the residents being inconvenienced by the developers? Now, the other thing is, if we are going to build a big hotel in our city, I think this motion could be very helpful if the will of the council is to build that hotel because of the perceived infrastructure and parking impacts that might come with such a large development. So I support this, and I think in South Australia there is not enough imposed on developers. Interstate we have developer bonds, if you like, or development. The previous CEO used to talk about it a lot, to his credit, is that there would be some assessment made and the developers would have to pay to address those infrastructure shortcomings. And we really do need to do some infrastructure assessment study, just like we do an environmental assessment before certain developments, before we actually approve a lot of things, because regardless of what happens with Mr. Noel's judgment on our development assessment planning proposals, we will get higher density in our city, and it's high time we actually started to actually found some revenue from the developers to actually address the impacts that they cause, and that's pretty much the intent of what Councillor Vlescu is trying to say. And I don't think the City of Adelaide is a good example of how developers have actually contributed to the decency of the city's traffic flows and parking. Basically, we'll welcome that development, we'll take the rate revenue, and we'll worry about the parking and traffic flows and infrastructure later. Well, it doesn't work. We all know it doesn't work, and this motion will go some of the way to actually addressing that.
Thank you. I'm sure you weren't deliberately trying to talk the time down. Councillor Crossland, you have a question. You also have a right to speak if you wish. Just bear in mind we've got about a minute and a half to go.
Mine's just a very quick question. Am I right in saying, because the answer's not very clear, that at the moment, even if we do have to build extra car parking spaces in a particular suburb due to development, we can't recover any of those costs from a developer? That's the legislation at the moment.
I don't think the bonds that Councillor Hull referred to apply in South Australia, but anything else from staff, or take it on notice?
I am saying that because when I was on the DAP, I'm sure we looked, I asked that very question when it needed extra infrastructure building, and I don't think in South Australia we can actually ask for a contribution.
Ms Dixon?
My understanding is we can't. I will take it on notice and confirm it with our planning manager.
Move extension. For 5 minutes.
I think you've already spoken in the debate. I refer to the staff comments in relation to Councillor Crossland's question. If there are no more speakers, Councillor Vlescu, to wrap up, we've got time, I'll simply put the motion. We're almost at the end of the meeting. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. And division wasn't called, but thanks for your advice, Mr. Mifsud. I didn't hear it. I note the question on notice and celebrate our community gardens. Thanks for the answer. I declare the meeting closed.